big show for you here today. I am on the road in Canton, Ohio for the Fantasy Football Expo, but a lot of preseason games happened, so tons to break down for you. I go through highlight news that you need to know. I also talk through playing time notes for some interesting players, and then some truly sicko rapid fire notes at the end, like Torrey Horton. I mean, Shedeur Sanders, day three draft picks. That's what we're talking about here on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. Then, more importantly, Scott Pianowski joins me to talk through eight draft strategies you need to know this year, how to attack robust running back. What about zero running back? If you want to go heavy at wide receiver, how do you dominate there? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. While you may be watching this live Sunday afternoon, watching it later on YouTube, or just listening Monday morning, as you can see, if you are watching it, I am in a hotel room here. Full disclosure, we're pre-filming this episode from Canton due to travel, etc. I obviously have been at the Fantasy Football Expo having a blast. It's been a great weekend. Been great to see Justin Boone, Scott Pianowski, our fearless leader, Jason Klobaka, and a bunch of people across the fantasy football industry. So it's been incredible. Hopefully you can stick with me during this little bad background situation, different visual. It's August, okay? Everybody across the football world, the fantasy industry, is traveling. We're in hotel rooms. It's a good thing here. We still have a great show for you here today. Scott is going to join me in the second segment to share his eight draft strategies to build the ideal roster this year, and you're going to get a ton out of that. You're going to learn a bunch of stuff. You're going to learn how to pretty much build any sort of roster construction that you want this year. But before that, I'm going to spend this first segment flying solo, sharing my biggest takeaways from early week one preseason action. Truly sick pup type stuff here at the top. But before we get to that, big announcement. Do you like me? Don't answer that question. Actually, I don't really want to know. Do you like this podcast? Which I really hope you do. And even better, I know that you like Justin Boone. I know that you love Scott Pianowski and Nate Tice. Well, big news. We are bringing the entire Yahoo Fantasy crew to Las Vegas in a couple of weeks for a Yahoo Fantasy kickoff weekend on Friday, August 22nd, and Saturday, August 23rd, at the Venetian Resort in Las Vegas. From 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on both nights, you can catch me, Boone, Scott, Nate, and the rest of the Yahoo Fantasy crew at the Yahoo Sportsbook inside the Venetian. I mean, you can't get any better than that. We're going to have a big meet and greet, a fantasy Q&A. And on Saturday, we were going to share our 10 biggest pieces of draft advice that you're going to need to hear before the season starts. You are not going to want to miss that. If you miss that, you might as well just go ahead and pack it in right now. You're not going to have a good fantasy season. That's my full guarantee. Again, that is Friday, August 22nd. And Saturday, August 23rd at 5 p.m. Pacific at the Yahoo Sportsbook inside the Venetian Resort in Las Vegas. Also, didn't tell you the best part yet. It's free $99, $0. Okay, so come by and talk some fantasy football, talk some NFL with us. It's going to be a great time. Now, with that out of the way, let's dive into my preseason takeaways. I'm just going to try and rip through as many things here as possible. I've got three buckets for my list. Headlines that matter, playing time notes, and then truly sicko stuff in the final bucket here. Let's start with the headlines that matter. Rashawn Slater, Chargers left tackle, is out for the season. Big takeaway. This stinks. This is not good. Rashawn Slater is one of the best left tackles in the NFL. The Chargers, some of the optimism that I had about their offense this year, obviously they have some really interesting skill position players. They've got Justin Herbert, who is a rock star quarterback, you know, top six player at the position in real life, a guy that I think really took a step last year in terms of his aggressiveness. You've got Ladd McConkey, who you guys know I love, Amarian Hampton, first-round running back, some intriguing receiving options with Keenan Allen now back in the building. Rashawn Slater being out, he is one of the best left tackles in the NFL, okay? Part of my optimism for this offense is that offensive line was going to be better this year. It was going to take a step forward with Mekhi Becton at right guard, with Joe Alt at right tackle, taking a step forward in his second season. Now it sounds, I mean, look, the Chargers actually have a plan here. They're going to push Joe Alt to left tackle. Trey Pipkins, who is not a great starter, but he has started at right tackle. He's going to step in there. So there is, they have some ability to survive this, but I do think you have to dock them some points as an offensive line overall. Again, Slater is one of the best players at the position. He was just rewarded with a big fat contract extension. So I'm going to have to dive into the ranks here pretty soon. I'm going to be doing a big refresh as soon as I digest all this information that we're about to talk about here today. And, you know, there might be some spots where, all right, maybe Amarian Hampton wants, he needs to come down a little bit. Maybe Ladd McConkey needs to come down a little bit. And this certainly makes me a little less interested in some of the depth pieces here. So fantasy community never reacts properly to offensive line injuries. I don't want to just yada yada this, but at least the fact that Joe Alt was, you know, a top five draft pick and played left tackle in college, I think that does give them some insurance there at the very least. Next thing, Jaguars wide receiver slash cornerback Travis Hunter played 11 out of 12 snaps with the first team offense in preseason and zero with the first team defense. He did mix in on some defensive snaps after that. I think this is just confirmation of what we should know at this point, that the Jaguars view Travis Hunter as an offensive first player. Watching the game last night and checking back some of it this morning, it's pretty obvious what kind of role Travis Hunter is going to have. You know, he is rotating in the slot. He's playing. He doesn't really see the field in two receiver sets because they have De'Ami Brown there to do that stuff. I don't really think that's going to matter very much. This is mostly an 11 personnel offense. I don't want to go nitty gritty on the, you know, two receiver thing here. And the reality is when Travis Hunter's on the field, he's going to be getting the football. So again, this is just more confirmation of what we should already know. Travis Hunter is an offensive first player. I want to get a little higher on Travis Hunter in my rankings. You guys know, if you listened to the show back at the NFL draft, just how special of a receiver prospect I thought this guy was. All the evidence is building that, again, he's going to be an offensive first player. And, you know, you saw a lot of the interesting bells and whistles just in a very, very, very vanilla sort of preseason setting that I think Liam Cohen is going to put in the mix here. So again, I really like Travis Hunter as a prospect. I think the fact that they're pushing him as a wide receiver is great news. There's some guys that I have ahead of him in my rankings that I need to take a look at here because I want to get Travis Hunter on some teams. I want to be aggressive on this player. I've been aggressive on him since the moment I charted his first three games for reception perception. So I want to kind of continue that theme here. Next piece of news, Tajay Spears, Titans number two running back, has a high ankle sprain. He was carted from the field on Saturday night as well. You know, Tony Pollard really feasted in times last year because Tajay Spears was just too banged up to really establish himself as a secondary member in that committee. I think this obviously pushes that potentially back onto our plates here to start the 2025 season. I'm not saying I'm really high on the Titans offense, but I think Cam Ward's going to come in here and really lift this unit. You saw the connection that him and Calvin Ridley have. You know, man, Ridley is a guy, again, that I have in that same tier as Travis Hunter, and I don't really know which one of those guys I really want to be bullish on because I like both of them in that range. That's just such an appealing area of the draft at wide receiver, and I think Ridley in some formats might go even a little bit later than that. So I want to take some shots here on Tony Pollard. I want to take some shots here on Calvin Ridley. And Tajay Spears, I think, actually is an interesting late-round dart throw because he has great contingency value and in like full PPR settings might be a nice pass catcher, but he just has been a little too banged up at this point, and that continues here this preseason. Next one up here, and I hate this, is Jaden Reed is in a boot with some sort of lower body injury. Matt LaFleur said he is hopeful for week one. Not great. Okay. As I wrote in the draft day blueprint, as Scott and I always talk about, and you know, this is something that Scott Pienowski has hammered in my head over the years, injuries are going to find you during your fantasy football season. You don't got to go looking for them in your draft. I want to get more information on this Jaden Reed injury. I don't want to overreact, but I already had him and Matthew Golden in the same tier, because this is an efficient offense. Jordan Love is a good quarterback who's aggressive. Like, he passes the minimum threshold to be interested in pass catchers. So I want to take shots on this offense. And, you know, again, there it's an efficiency boost the way they call plays, the motion, the play action, everything they do from a structural perspective. Tucker Kraft is my guy at tight end, but Jaden Reed is a player I've been really high on as well over the course of his NFL career, actually dating back to his prospect profile. But Matthew Golden's round one pick was a really quality zone beater in his collegiate reception perception sample, and a guy that can win the ball in tight coverage as well. He brings a different skill set than Jaden Reed. So I already wanted to draft Matthew Golden. If we continue to not get good injury news on Jaden Reed, I might just right now, like if I was drafting today, I'd take Matthew Golden ahead of Jaden Reed. I reserve the right to change my mind about that over the course of August because it is August 10th. We are not close to the end of the month. But if I was drafting today, I think I'd rather have Matthew Golden than Jaden Reed. All right, continuing on the injury theme here, Anthony Richardson got banged up in his preseason game on Thursday night. He had a finger dislocation is what he called it. His pinky finger on his throwing hand was a full 90 degree angle there. Not what you want to see. Also, if you haven't seen it, every former quarterback has posted a video about like why this was Anthony Richardson's fault, getting himself blown up there. So, and that is true. I mean, look, from a rules perspective, we don't need to dissect that here. Like I said, every smart former quarterback has put a video up, so you can find that stuff on social media. But this is the story with Anthony Richardson. It's a details issue and it's an injury issue. So, I was getting excited about Richardson potentially building momentum in training camp and, you know, maybe carrying that into starting week one. And, you know, I'm interested in the Anthony Richardson story. And when he's on the field, he's a viable fantasy option, but he does change the complexion of the offense for the skill position players, the pass catchers for Jonathan Taylor and the touchdown total. If he's out there, it's a different picture than if Daniel Jones is out there. Now that he's injured, this is once again going to throw a wrench in a quarterback situation that seems very, to use Michael Scott, snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap, as in terms of who's going to start here. So continue to monitor that situation. Probably should have had this one a lot higher in the rundown, but Sean McVay on Saturday night told us that Matthew Stafford is going to participate on Monday. He threw more than 60 passes, according to McVay, on Saturday. So look, we've talked about this a lot. This Matthew Stafford situation, it's worrisome right now. It is something to monitor. But again, the reality is it's August 10th. As I said with Scott earlier this week when we talked on the first round show that, yeah, hey, Puka Nacua right now, I've got to dock him down a little bit. On August 5th, it was like, okay, let's be concerned. Let's dock him down a little bit. But if we get to August 25th, and Matthew Stafford is participating in practice, it's not a concern, then I think you can get more excited about Rams stuff. I'm still very much concerned about some of the pass protection and Stafford just lasting through the season, but I feel good that he's about to start. Like, let's see how this week goes, basically. That's kind of where I'm at with this. Last one here, Rashad White has a groin injury. Don't know the severity of this one, but Bucky Irving, if he takes any sort of like just full pass catching down work away from Rashad White, I think he's going to look really good at his ADP. He's not somebody that I'm ahead of ADP on, or I'm not like fading him where he goes. He's just kind of fine to me. There was, you know, we do drafts here at the Fantasy Football Expo, the King's Classic. There was a point where Bucky Irving was on the board and I thought about taking him, ultimately ended up going in a different direction because it is a full PPR format. And, you know, just again, I'm not quite sure about the full pass catching role with some of the screen stuff maybe going away with Liam Cohen out. Josh Grizzard says he wants to push the football down the field more. But then this Rashad White injury happens, something you might at least want to just that would cause like some slight tweaks in the running back rankings. But it depends on the severity. So keep your eye on that one. Next section, let's talk playing time notes here. A lot of this stuff is going to come from Nathan Junkie of PFF. Does great work. Of course, he's been doing work with Pro Football Focus forever. He, you know, shared the in-season snap counts. He writes full reports on this stuff. So this one is pulled directly from one of his articles talking about the Texans wide receivers in this game that the Texans just played in the preseason. Obviously, Nico Collins was not out there. But again, quote, Higgins was consistently playing the X role when he was on the field, while Xavier Hutchinson was the Z receiver. If the plan was for Higgins to play the Z role in the regular season, he presumably would have been used in this role in this game. I think it's a great note from Nathan. I'm not writing that in pen, of course. You know, I got to really dive into the film myself, which I have not done just yet. Yes, that's right. Watching preseason film. It is time to get down into the muck, into the grime, and be doing stuff like that because it's August and we're preparing for the season here. But this is something that's on my radar. Like, I don't know that everybody else is just going to going to note this. There's probably not a lot of fantasy shows digging into the X and Z receiver details with second round rookies who are like late round flyers, but that's why you come and watch this sort of nonsense with me. So why I think this matters. Number one, I do think that the three receiver set to start the year is Nico Collins, Jaden Higgins on the outside, Christian Kirk in the slot. I think Kirk is a guy that can play on the outside in two receiver sets. Jalen Noel, one of my favorite prospects in the class this year. I grouped him in the same tier as a guy like Matthew Golden, like a late first rounder, early second type that if a team had taken him in the back of the first round, I would have been totally fine with. I felt very similar about Josh Downs two draft classes ago. Those guys literally went at the same exact pick, Josh Downs and then Jalen Noel a couple years later. And you see how Josh Downs has turned out to be a really, really good pro. I think Jalen Noel in time will be a really good pro. I think he's just, there's no way to like kind of parse him onto the field right now, but talent does eventually rise to the top here. So won't be surprising to me if he is like a back half guy in the season or maybe just 2026. That's a guy who's a clear breakout player. But the Jaden Higgins thing is on my radar for two reasons. One, I think that Jaden Higgins is a guy who probably shouldn't be playing X receiver. I feel, and I don't think he'll be like exclusively X like Keon Coleman is in Buffalo. I thought those guys were kind of similar as prospects. I think they'd be more maximized as flanker receivers who kick into the slot and be kind of those big jumbo slot receivers. Nico Collins is a tier one elite NFL receiver who plays mostly X. If this is true, if Jaden Higgins is going to take, let's call it 50% plus snaps at X receiver in the regular season, and Nathan is right about this, I just think that is going to mean Nico Collins, who has been a full-time X, over 80% of his snaps outside on the line of scrimmage in all of his NFL seasons. If he's going to move around the formation more, take flanker snaps, be off the line of scrimmage, he's going to get more layup targets. He's going to be in motion more. He's going to take like snaps from the backfield. He's going to take snaps from the slot. I'm not saying he's going to go full Puka Nacua with his deployment because Nick Cayley does come from that Rams tree. But if he gets like a little bit more of that treatment, if he becomes like a Jamar Chase last year, who was a full-time X receiver in his starting, you know, rookie year, to now he's a guy that moves around the formation, got more snaps in motion than ever before in his NFL career last season. It's just going to jump up that fantasy football ceiling, man. He's going to have like wide receiver one overall in his range of outcomes. So, yeah, I think Higgins is a nice late round flyer, but his deployment also says a lot about Nico Collins. So, again, continue to monitor this. We will be talking about it here on the show and why this affects all of the Texans' wideouts. Let's stick in the AFC South here. For a more straightforward, non-complete Dorco playing time note, Travis Etienne ran every snap with the starters at running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Then it was Tank Bigsby who comes on next. Then Bajal Tootin, who I thought played pretty well. I also noted this to several folks last night that you could see like Bajal Tootin when he got in that open field when it was time to break a tackle, he was holding on to that football. Okay, he was tight on that thing. He does not want to drop that football, put it on the dirt, put it on the grass. In the preseason, no fumble issues for Tootin. That's on his radar, which is good. He needs to work on the ball security. That was an issue in college, and obviously it was a storyline in minicamp as well. Tootin can still rise throughout the course of the season. Like, fantasy is not about figuring out who's going to be on the field in week one, especially with these rookies. It's about, can they build momentum? Can there start to be a story for later in the year? Right now, I would say that, you know, Bigsby's going to be like an early down banger, and ETN has a lot of access to the passing game. I think you just take your shots on this backfield. I don't think there's one clear answer. It seemed like Tank Bigsby had a lot of momentum in training camp, and I do think early on, as I said, he was way too just counted out in this backfield rotation. He's going to play a big role. So again, take your shots on these. There's not one guy where I'm just like, this is the guy this year. I would just try to get some exposure to all of these backs because I think at some point, Tootin can rise up here, and if he does, maybe he pushes one of these guys to the side, maybe not. I don't think this is a full settled situation yet. What is settled, again, staying in the AFC South, Tyler Warren, first round pick of the Indianapolis Colts at tight end, played 20 of the Colts' first 20 snaps. There's a math problem in Indianapolis with these pass catchers, which is why I like all these guys, but I haven't been fully aggressive taking any of them. Even my guy, Josh Downs, I did get him in the salary cap draft here, about like 12-ish bucks, I believe I got Josh Downs for, maybe a little bit more than that. It was a long draft. These salary cap drafts in person take for freaking ever, but I'm not going hard to try to get any of these Colts players because again, it's a math problem. And Tyler Warren being out there, he's going to be part of this math problem as well. I do think maybe I need to bump Tyler Warren up the rankings a little bit. I'm probably a little bit too far behind ADP. It just, again, if it's going to be Richardson, it's an even bigger math problem because he's going to take dropbacks away because he's going to scramble. And the efficiency is just not going to be there with Daniel Jones. It's not going to be there with Anthony Richardson. So Tyler Warren's role is solidified. I still have questions about the offense overall. Samaje Perine, Bengals running back, took third downs and some other clear passing plays with the Bengals first team offense from Chase Brown, according to Nathan Junkie of PFF. Again, Chase Brown, this does not hurt Chase Brown's outlook. Again, Perine, I think, is actually just a snap eater. Okay. He is a guy who's going to play on passing down snaps. He had third downs, like we said here, but he's not going to threaten Chase Brown's rushing work. I mentioned this on Football 301 from week 10 on. Chase Brown had a 74% share of the rushing attempts for the Cincinnati Bengals, which was right up there with Jonathan Taylor for the most in the league. He was also a high-end pass catcher. He basically had Devon Achane's target share from that point on, week 10 on. Maybe that passing work comes down just a touch. Perine gets some little cutesy catches here and there, but Brown still has a first round fantasy back like workload projection who goes in the third round. So he's a guy I really like. I want to get some Chase Brown. I want you guys to draft some Chase Brown. I'm not saying take him in the first round. I'm not saying take him like early in the second round, but still a guy that you should be getting in the third round. Really one of my favorite picks in that third round range. Just want to talk about the Panthers' first team offense here. I think we got to give a bump to Tetero McMillan as well, who had the exact kind of role you would imagine in the preseason week one. Saw a lot of this game on the big screen at one of the parties here at the Fantasy Football Expo. Number one, McMillan's running the exact routes I want to see from him. A lot of in-breakers, deeper digs, those horizontal breaking routes, some stuff to the sideline as well. And Bryce Young is like he's trusting McMillan with these in-breaking anticipatory throws, which, man, they are a really, really good fit together. Also, we can officially say that the three receiver set, which we should expect this to be true for the Carolina Panthers, it's McMillan at X, it's Xavier Leggett, and then it's Adam Thielen. Leggett got tossed from this game, little ejection for scrapping up in there. And then my guy Jalen Coker comes in, scores a touchdown from Bryce Young. Coker continued to play through the game. I think Coker is going to be on this roster, and I just film in year one, Coker was a better player than Leggett. We'll see how it continues to go. But he, again, Coker, from a dynasty perspective, is just somebody I want to bet on. Like, I want him on the end of my bench. I want to have some Jalen Coker in dynasty because I think he's a good player. But for this year, what we saw in the preseason is I think Bryce Young played well. I think this is a good offensive line. These receivers are interesting. But the guy here is Tetero McMillan, who I think is just a really good pick where he goes right now in Yahoo drafts. It's a little too low. He's somebody, again, I want to try to bump up the ranks along with Travis Hunter among these rookie wide receivers. Couple Broncos notes here to group together. RJ Harvey started this game with Bo Nix. He ran out as the starting running back. He played alongside Nix. I think it's going to be a committee between J.K. Dobbins and RJ Harvey, but you just want to bet on a guy like RJ Harvey, potential pass catching role here. So somebody that I like as once we get to like running back 20, he's somebody I kind of want to start taking there. I don't mind J.K. Dobbins, but more of kind of the banger early down stuff. He's going to factor in here, but definitely RJ Harvey is the guy. Don't worry about it. I mean, the preseason depth charts, he's RB5. Nobody cares about that. Marvin Mims Jr. Saw like a pretty traditional starting receiver workload from Nathan. Again, Mims played 16 of 19 snaps with the starters and left the game at the same time as Bo Nix. You know, I posted a video about this over the weekend. Marvin Mims had like the weirdest reception perception profile of all time. One of the highest screen route rates, played 30.7% at sampled snaps in the backfield. That includes running back snaps and snaps when he's in motion as well. The previous high I'd ever had was Debo Samuel at like 18% when he was truly playing some running back games. Okay. Like he was taking running back up the gut carries. So Marvin Mims is a pure gadget guy to me. Maybe he takes a step forward, but 44% success rate versus man coverage last year, that was like a first percentile mark. A lot of growth as a wide receiver that needs to take place here, but he is somebody who I think is like a fine late round pick. He's just a weird player. There's no question about that, but I'm not closing the door here on him maybe developing. He's certainly somebody that needs to get more complete in his game, or he's going to lose work to, or not going to lose work, but like Devon Vele, Pat Bryant, those guys are going to be more intermediate weapons. But for now, I think Marvin Mims should be the second ranked Broncos receiver. Just goes a little too high in ADP. I never end up really getting him. Breece Hall rotated in this game with the New York Jets. Both Isaiah Davis and Braylon Allen mixed in with the first team offense. It wasn't like a clean split either. It wasn't, oh, this guy's this role, this guy's this. It was just a pure rotation. I'm not going to overreact and drop Breece Hall in the rankings because of this. It's preseason. Same thing with like Rico Dowdle, who rotated in with Chuba Hubbard. I'm not going to freak out and like overanalyze week one of the preseason, but this is just something that's on my radar. I want to make you guys aware of, because there's just been some weirdness with Breece Hall. Is he a trade candidate? Could he be the Cowboys running back one by week one? That would be pretty exciting. But that's like, you know, fantasy land stuff. In fantasy football, you just got to be aware that Breece Hall is rotating a little bit. But I'm not going to overreact, but it's something to be on the radar. Will Shipley, running back two in Philadelphia. That's, again, late round flyer on him. He's clearly established as the running back two. If something happens to Saquon Barkley, he's going to be somebody that everybody's rushing to on the waiver wire. So if you have deeper benches, if you got a stash spot, throw him on at the end of your bench there. He is going to be somebody, again, if Barkley ever got banged up, you'd want him on your team. All right, let's sicko stuff. Rapid fire this one. Definitely want to hit on these, but we're going to go quickly here. Number one, my guy Torrey Horton, who I ranked as an early day two player, went in the fifth round because of an injury. You guys good at football. He is pushing, if not beating out, Marquez Valdes-Scantling for an outside receiver spot in Seattle. Probably not on the redraft radar yet, but guy that I wanted dynasty. Took him in like the fourth round of some leagues, if not late third round. Guy's going to be good. Okay, he is shining. Somebody that might get on the redraft radar at some point, but definitely be aware that Torrey Horton is good at football. He is legit. Blake Corum seems to have the early lead on Jarquez Hunter as the running back two in Los Angeles. Again, he's in that Will Shipley mode that if something happened to Kyron Williams, people would be interested in Blake Corum. But I'm not saying it's set in stone. Blake Corum is the running back two, but right now seems to have the lead. Isaac Tesla is a Lions X receiver, okay? Go back and listen to some of my stuff about him, that I did around the draft if you want to learn more. But he's an intriguing prospect who is mostly a slot guy with a lot of tools. But he's starting to get some work and seems to be trending up, like as maybe not a starter, but somebody that's getting some work with the first team offense. And they do have an opening at X because they moved James Williams around. Obviously, Amon-Ra St. Brown, primary slot. So, again, this is the sicko freak section. You got to talk about Isaac Tesla. Let's also talk about Luke McCaffrey, who was playing outside for Washington while KJ Osborne was like more of a slot receiver for the Commanders. McCaffrey's just, look, they have an opening for another outside receiver because Debo's a pure gadget guy to me at this point. McLaurin obviously is holding out. Noah Brown is not an answer out there. So definitely somebody to keep in mind there is Luke McCaffrey, who is more of a developmental power slot type, but I thought flashed a little bit, beating zone coverage as a rookie. Keaton Mitchell really popped off the field for the Ravens in their preseason game. He, I think, needs to get back on the late round radar. Doesn't probably have any standalone value, but he would make for a really nice, hey, we get this guy six touches just to give Derrick Henry a breather. And if Derrick Henry ever missed time, I think Keaton Mitchell can actually play. Ray Garvin has talked about this. He talked about this on our sleeper show, but Dante Thornton, fourth round pick of the Raiders, big size, speed. I mean, he runs and looks like Calvin Johnson. He's not Calvin Johnson, but he is the starting X receiver for the Las Vegas Raiders. Just probably best ball only, real deep, deep guy for redraft, but does at least give us some clarity on the Raiders receiver room. Jack Besh, their second round pick, is rotating in with guys like Trey Tucker and Jacoby Myers, but somebody that might be more like a year two guy in Dynasty, which is totally fine. Last note, and this is more just pure qualitative, young quarterbacks. I thought Shedeur Sanders, JJ McCarthy, and Jackson Dart all played pretty well in the preseason, okay? To varying degrees. McCarthy doesn't have the stats that Shedeur Dart did because he obviously he's going to start week one. He's going to start the whole season, but I thought he handled the preseason pretty well. He also handled the preseason pretty well last year, so it's not going to cause me to move anything in rankings on any Vikings guys, but just good to see him checking some boxes, not going out there and being like, oh, completely overwhelmed in the preseason or something like that. So feel pretty good about where we're at with JJ McCarthy. Jackson Dart, I got to say, again, I had this up on the screen because in the salary cap draft, because it takes forever. There's a lot of just waiting around for people to bid on players that I don't really want on my team anyway. So, and I save my $1 flyers, whatever. I'm looking at Jackson Dart, like standing in the pocket under pressure, like just down the barrel and ripping it down the field. That's good to see. Russell Wilson is a guy that I'm not saying I'm warming to Russ, but I do think he fits well with Malik Nabers. Russell Wilson last year, according to Fantasy Points data, led all quarterbacks that took over 100 dropbacks with 72.9 yards per game on go routes and post routes. That's about all Russell Wilson can do at this point, do that and then check the football down, but he can rip that thing to Nabers down the field. But Dart looking good in the preseason. If he continues that momentum, and it's a tough early season schedule for the Giants, maybe we see him sooner than later. And lastly, we saw a ton of Shedeur Sanders. Look, the big shows are going to break this down, you know, like it's the biggest story ever. I was just glad to see Shedeur play well. The Browns might as well get him some work with the first team. What do they have to lose? I mean, you got to prepare Joe Flacco to start the season, but just maybe give him some looks here because Kenny Pickett and Dylan Gabriel are still banged up. They signed Tyler Huntley, of course, but Shedeur at least handled himself really well. It's just I don't want to spend too much time like deeply breaking down preseason film of the fourth quarterback right now for what might be the worst offense in the league, but good to see that for him as he continues to try to push to not just make the roster, but maybe get some starts at some point this year. It was good to see him play well. That's about all I got. It wasn't anything crazy, but there were some good moments where he was under pressure, made good decisions, and showed the ability to get out the pocket and just pick up positive yards for his team. So good for Shedeur Sanders, who I honestly feel bad for at times. I mean, just such a crazy media sensation. You know, you got shows talking about, is he being set up to fail by getting action in the preseason? Like, no, he's being set up to show he can play football, which is what he did. So good for Shedeur Sanders, but of course doesn't really matter in fantasy football this year. All right, let's toss to the rest of the show. After the break, Scott Pienowski joins me to talk through 8 strategies you need to know heading into your drafts this year, right after this. Joining me now on the pod is Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. You know, just enjoying August, enjoying fantasy football season, enjoying the 28 days of fantasy, and just a lot of good stuff going on right now. And of course, you know, with every team, they're starting to scrimmage other teams. We're starting to see notes and nuggets and things that we are actually actionable for our rankings and planning. So a lot to figure out.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, I mentioned this up at the top, obviously. For the folks watching this at home live, we did pre-film this segment ahead of our Fantasy Football Expo travel, which is actually fantastic because, Scott, it's going to allow you to actually give us some high-level draft strategy takeaways that go above the noise that is the preseason Twitter camp highlights, which I probably spent all of the opening segment overreacting to. So here's how this is going to go. When drafting, there is more than one way to build your team. There's many paths to success. Scott, you have 8 strategies for success that we will go over today. We're going to start with 3 paths at the running back position, 1 for the wide receiver and the tight end position, and then finish with 3 paths that you have at the quarterback spot. But let's jump into the running back position here, how to construct the ideal roster in the draft at this position. Running back strategy number 1, Scott, robust running back. Give us sort of the lowdown on this.
Sure. As I'll say also as an overview, I like to say any strategy can work if you pick the right players, and any great strategy can fail if you pick the wrong players. So just keep that in mind. Robust RB, get the best running back room in the league. This is how everybody drafted once upon a time in the fantasy days, the 1995, 2000, whatever, you know, the heyday of Emmett Smith, the heyday of LaDainian Tomlinson, the heyday of Marshall Faulk. You wanted that number one pick. And I have moved away from this for the most part, but I'm still open to doing it if I'm in a league that only requires 2 starting receivers. It means I didn't set up the league because all my leagues are going to require 3 starting receivers and probably multiple flexes. But if there's only 2 receivers you need, every league's going to start at least 2 running backs. That's where you want to go robust RB, which is you're taking a running back in the first round, maybe in the second or third round, and you want your running back room to be the envy of the league.
Yeah, it's the envy of the league when you can nail this running back position. And Scott, like when I look at the board this year, I just published, as we're taping this earlier this week, my draft day blueprint piece. And I really feel like this year is a great year to attack the running back position early. Like, I don't know if it depends. And you're right that the strategy can work depending on you picking the right players, and you picking, quote, the right players also depends on where you're drafting. You and I talked about this earlier last week, where we love picking at the turn this year, or at least I definitely love picking at the turn this year. And it presents a nice opportunity to stack the running back and great wide receiver, but you could also be tempted by two wide receivers there. But I certainly think like leaving the first four, bare minimum five rounds with two running backs is something I want to do this year.
Yeah, and look at the running back board, right? Bijan Robinson, third season. Jahmyr Gibbs, I think it's his fourth season. Genty is a rookie. Devon Achane, third season. It's Jonathan Taylor, still a front nine player to me. Chase Brown is in his 20s and never came off the field last year. Get him probably in the second round. Kyren Williams just signed a contract extension. And I haven't mentioned any of the older guys. If you're open to Barkley, if you're open to Henry, if you're open to Jacobs, I feel like there's a dozen really good running backs. I want to even other builds I'm going to do, I'm probably going to target at least one of those guys. But if you're going robust RB in almost any slot, you could get two of them if you so endeavored to before the draft. So look, no matter what strategy you use, your bench is going to have a lot of running backs. It's going to have a lot of lottery tickets. It's going to have a lot of contingency value plays. I never want to act like any strategy uses that bench running back motif, you know, to itself, because I think everybody who's smart in fantasy will do that. But there's something you sleep. If you nail the, here's the other thing too, Matt, if you want to nail one position, if there's one position to get right, it's the running back position. If you have the best running backs or close to the best running backs in the league, I think that's more advantageous than having the dominant players at any other position, even though there are other strategies that will talk about vanities and going early at other positions. And it can make sense based on your league structure. But if the genie came down and said, okay, I'll give you the answer at one position, I'll give you all the right answers. Now, granted, if you had all the right answers, you could take all the late round running backs who were going to pop too. But
right,
say the genie was going to give you all the right answers for the first three or four rounds, only one position, I'd say, tell me what running backs are going to pop, because they would probably be the most impactful.
Yeah, and I just think that unlike normal years, you mentioned this because of the just – the amount of guys that are in their primes right now, and the fact that like there are still some dudes that should be out of their prime, but they're not, like Derrick Henry, who we talked about in our first round podcast. You know, some, you're not in on Christian McCaffrey necessarily as a first round pick. I'm more so okay with it, but like those guys are still hanging around, and we have this like big youth movement. You know, Bucky Irving as a top 10 running back, he's coming off of his first season in the NFL. Amarian Hampton is a guy who's shooting up boards, right? Like, unlike normal, I think there's like four tiers of running backs that I'm really interested in. Like, there's not a group of guys where I'm just like, like there are specific players and things like that. But for the most part, I don't see a big group of guys where I'm just trying to avoid that entire block of the draft. And that's why Robust RB does. It's pretty appealing, especially once we get to like the strength of the wide receiver position is deep this year as well. Like, that's another area where there's just an influx of young guys. And I think rounds 5 to 8, Scott, at the wide receiver position present a lot more appealing picks, honestly, than some of the round 3-4 guys this year. So that's just like another reason when you start accounting for other positions why I think like loading up on running back early is probably the right strategy, at least for me this year.
Yeah, I see a lot of benefits for it. And I'm so glad you mentioned Amarian Hampton, because I feel like every time I look at ADP, he's crawled up a couple more spots. And when you look over a week or a 10-day period, it feels like he's jumped a full round. And people a lot of times say, oh, we have to draft on Labor Day weekend or right before the season, because I don't know who's going to get hurt. And, you know, who wants to draft early? One of the reasons why it's fun to draft early is if you see a thing like a player like Hampton coming. You draft him in June, you draft him in July, you got him at a ridiculous discount. And that discount is slowly fizzling away. And I feel like by the end of August, he's going to be a third round pick, maybe a second round pick in some leagues. You can't get that then. You might get it now. So Hampton's arrow is pointed up. I think everybody's pretty much in on him. And just the reason why you might sprinkle in. There's never a bad time to draft, right? Well, who says you can't draft early in August, middle of August, late August, draft in September, draft during the season, right? I'm famous for starting up leagues a couple of weeks into the season. Let's see what we got right. Let's see what we got wrong. Let's try this over again. So there's really no bad time to draft. I know a lot of people listening, watching are going to have multiple teams anyway. So why not get an early team? So maybe you can get in on this Hampton business before the ADP gets a little bit ridiculous. Because I think everybody sees he's their best back. they're ready to lean into him. It's a team set up to run the ball. They have a good offensive line. They have a certain mindset in Los Angeles. So yeah, Hampton to the moon.
Let's talk through the second running back strategy here, which is hero RB. Scott, usually on transparent, this is usually the way I like to approach the running back position. I'm not a full on zero RB guy, which that's strategy number three. Maybe you can loop these two together. But honestly, with the hero RB thing, usually I like to do it this year. I haven't been going that direction enough, but explain this particular strategy for the people unfamiliar so far.
Yeah, you know, I wrote up an article on this a long time ago, like 2014 for Yahoo, and I called it anchor RB versus zero RB. I didn't come up with the great hero tag. I think it might have been Matt Kelly, a player profile, who came up with the hero RB name, which is just so much better than anchor, even though I think I was pretty early to the idea. I don't know if I was first or not. Who the heck knows who is first to anything anymore? Yeah, but
I have no idea.
The idea with this anchor RB, the idea with this hero RB is you're going to get one you really like. Probably a first round pick or a second round pick. And then you're going to pound the other positions and you'll mix and match. Maybe you'll get somebody in a committee. Maybe you'll get a bunch of upside lottery tickets, whatever it is. You're going to backfill running back, but you're going to have one guy who you're like every week starter, probably a top 10, top 12 back. If you have the right draft slot, you might be a top five running back. But the idea that you have one guy who's fantastic, and then you're, you know, because the position, Matt, we've seen it in recent years, more platoons. The bell cow is almost an endangered species right now. There's only a couple of guys you can really call a true bell cow. Most teams are going to have 70-30, 60-40, 80-20. Maybe the quarterback runs some. I mean, there's just going to be sprinkling of where the carries go. This is not the fantasy football that we played in the 90s and the 2000s where the teams, the depth chart is wider, the usage is wider. So that means that there are more running backs that we're accepting as a running back two, as a running back three, as what Sigmund Bloom would call a what-the-heck flex. That pool is bigger, and therefore, if you go the hero RB route, and if anybody who hasn't tried this, and also for zero RB, this applies as well, you might think, oh, no, I got to draft running backs. I'm going to hate the running backs I get. The thing is, the pool of playable commodities is wider than it's ever been. It's deeper than it's ever been. So you'll be surprised that your running back two, you start an opening day, isn't that bad. The running back you draft in the dead zone or even after the dead zone is still playable. You're going to find guys on your bench that you like. So I feel like that pool of rosterable and startable players is wider. And that's why, to me, here, I like here. I'm a modified guy. I get the medium pizza. I hit a 3-wood or a 5-wood off the tee. You know, that's kind of like my life anyway. I like to hedge when I have opportunities to do so. So something in the middle. The middle porridge kind of works for me. Now, let me just mention a little bit on zero RB. The idea when you go zero, that's I'm hitting everything else first. I'm not taking any of those top 15 running backs, top 20 running backs. And you're going to prey on the chaos. This is a position with a high injury rate. We didn't see that last year. It was an outlier season. Nobody expects that to happen again when the running backs are, by and large, pretty healthy. The idea at zero RB is that every time the chaos kicks in, it helps me because I've got a bunch of stashes. I got a bunch of contingency value guys. I have guys in nebulous backfields. Maybe I landed on the right one, but their price wasn't that expensive on draft day. The reason why I'm reluctant to go zero RB is back to what I mentioned a minute or two ago. Most fantasy leagues are filled with sharp managers who understand that no matter what your running back build is, hero, zero, robust, you want your bench to have a bunch of running backs too. And I think sometimes the conceit of zero RB was that, oh, I'm going to have all these running backs on my bench and other people won't follow suit. I think everybody does that now. I think everybody realizes how important that is. It's the position we always talk about. Okay, if Tyreek Hill's hurt in Miami, there isn't a Tyreek Hill Jr. ready to come in who assumes like 90% of his value. It doesn't work that way. You know, I know Noah Gray isn't a bad football player, but if Travis Kelce gets hurt, Gray is not Kelce. He's not 80% of Kelce. Football doesn't work that way, but we see it all We've the time this, at running yeah. back. When you can redistribute those touches, that opportunity, a lot of times a back, even if he doesn't have a pedigree, even if we don't know much about him, even if he was undrafted or practice squad guy, it doesn't matter. That's the position where the new starter, the new guy coming into 10, 12, 15, 18 touches is immediately fantasy viable, immediately fantasy startable in a way that the other positions don't offer that replacement value. So whatever you're robust, you go hero, you go zero, you're going to fill your bench with a lot of these running backs anyway. And that's why I think zero is not the way to go. But again, you have to play to your room. You have to season the taste, the way people draft in your league. I'm a hero guy generally, although I would go robust in the right situation. I'm not a zero RB guy. I will say, when you draft zero RB and it works, I mean, you feel like a genius, right? You feel like you cheated, yeah, right? You feel like you skipped. You feel like you didn't read the book in English class and you got an A on the essay anyway. That's how it feels. But they're all viable in the right situation. I'm leaning towards hero RB in 2025. But because the pool is wider with guys we can actually start, I think any of these strategies are viable in the right room.
That's such a great way to say it, that, yeah, when you nail zero RB, like, you feel alive, right? Like the jolt runs through you at the end of the season. Like, yeah, that's right. I ignored the marquee position in fantasy football, the running backs. And, you know, think about, like I mentioned on the first round picks show, just how dominant Christian McCaffrey has been from 2022 to 2023 as a fantasy scorer. You're like, you know what? I didn't need that. Okay. I didn't need that. What I needed was all these badass wide receivers. And look, when we talk wide receivers, I'm going to hammer the point that that position is, again, it is so deep with viable players, right? And like, I nailed all those picks there. The running backs got hurt. I leaned into the chaos, because that's what I love your framing of the zero RB here, is that, like, it truly is a strategy. And, you know, when this was first like being discussed on the internet, Sean Siegel, of course, of RotoViz, was the one
who came up
with zero RB. Yeah. And Sean is still doing fantastic work to this day. You know, he's kind of the one that came up with the zero RB thing. I remember debating this with, you know, like, Fabs back at the NFL Network days about, you know, the merits of it. And to me, it was just like, the NFL is a chaos league, to use your term. It is a snow globe league. Like, things change every year. Right now, like, again, if I'm staring at myself in the mirror and, like, kind of trying to be introspective here, right now I'm sitting here saying, like, yeah, look at the pool of running backs up at the top of the draft. Like, this looks really good. Like, there's a lot, there's like four tiers of players that I think are pretty interesting to take running back picks from. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, I definitely wouldn't have said that. And it's because of injuries and it's because of chaos. And we are coming off a beautiful running back season, right? Where these young star players emerged. Some guys like Chase Brown were zero RB hits, like mega hits last year. He's now a top 12 running back off the board in most drafts. We have the Bucky Irvins, we have the Devon Achans, we have Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry smashing in new spots. What if chaos hits the position this year? What if these guys get hurt and it's like, okay, damn, how much we bidden for Rashad White on the waiver wire, you know? And that's another great point that you made there as well, that you're not just competing with the other zero RB teams, because I don't give a damn if I've got two great starting running backs. A starting running back comes on the waiver wire, I'm chasing that guy with as much fab as possible. You know, I'm putting a high priority bid on that player on the waiver wire. So it is definitely a lean into chaos strategy, Scott. And I do wonder if we are just a little bit more, if we're a little bit more just kind of too settled at the running back position right now than maybe we have been previously.
It's a fair question. I mean, it's never been harder to win your fantasy league, because even the weakest manager in your league has good resources in front of them. They have somebody who knows what they're doing, who's giving them a list, who's giving them advice. I mean, hopefully it's the people at Yahoo, but there's just good intel other places. I'm not going to pretend there isn't. So we live in a different world. I want to mention something else that we talked about last week. When it comes to the running backs you take for your bench, the guys you're not starting in September, the guys you're hoping become something later in the season, I am not a believer in insuring your running back in August, meaning if I draft Barkley, I'm not taking one of his backups. If I take McCaffrey, I'm probably not taking Garendo. If I take Aaron Jones, I'm probably not taking Jordan Mason. I'd probably just rather have Jordan Mason anyway. But the idea is that I want you to play for the big inning in August. I want you to think about the specialized winning scenario in October, November, meaning that's when I would back up my running back, where we have a better sense of who the backup is, what the system looks like, what the offensive line looks like. And I'm, you know, think of a baseball team where it's never right for a Major League Baseball team to bunt in the first or second inning. You're trying to build a lead and score a bunch of runs. But if you're in an extra inning game, you need one more run. It might be right. You know what the game situation is. You're playing for one run now. It might be right to bunt. So to me, handcuffing or, you know, contingency value, backup value, insurance value, whatever you term you want to use, I run away from it in August. I think it's a mistake. I think it's limiting your upside, but I will steer into that. I think backup running back season, insurance running back season, somewhere around Halloween, late October, early November, that's when I change my stance on that.
Last question on this, because I think this fits particularly well with zero RB, right? And but it is pertinent to all strategies, right? Because it's good to go into a plan. It's good to go into a draft with a plan. But the question is, when do you pull the ripcord on that plan? I think, again, it's very pertinent for the zero RB discussion, Scott, because, you know, you remember the Seinfeld episode when Kramer test drives the car and he like pushes the car salesman to take it all the way to E, like take it just as far as it can go. That is sometimes the feeling when you're doing zero RB, right? Where it's like, nope, just push it one more round without taking a running back. Push it one more round. But then the board starts looking pretty gross. So when in drafts do you start to kind of get a vibe of, all right, I got to pull the ripcord on this strategy. Like, it is not working. I'm going to go ahead and bail and pivot here.
I'm so glad you said that, because the strategies we're discussing today, they're all position specific. But the overarching thing I want to tell you is that whatever strategy you have, you write it in pencil. You have to be willing to pivot. If you go zero RB before the draft, and then you're picking 10th or something, and I don't know, Bijan Robinson for some reason's on the board, or somebody silly that just shouldn't be there who plays running back, I'm going to pivot, man. I don't care. Didn't fit what I felt like an hour ago, a day ago, a week ago. You have to be prepared to react to, you have to feel the room out. It's like, you know, you would never say, oh, I'm going to play poker tonight and I'm going to bluff on hand 27. I'm going to play really aggressive in the second hour. You don't know. You don't know who you're sitting next to. You don't know the vibe of the room. And a lot of this stuff is going to be feel. It's going to be experience and stuff that you're going to figure out in the heat of the moment. So whatever strategy, and I know this isn't a great answer to your specific question, but I still think it's useful to say, whatever these strategies that you feel most comfortable with. And this is why, you know, we have mock drafts on Yahoo. You can do a mock draft anytime you want and get a feel for what your league might be like. Get those reps in, get that experience in so that you'll have a comfort of trusting yourself when, okay, the fourth or fifth round has come. Things have gone a little bit off script. This isn't the way I thought my roster would look, but opportunities have presented themselves. I'm going to take advantage of those opportunities. Don't lock yourself into, I have to take this position in round one. I have to take this position in round two. I have to take this position in round three. Be open. It's all in pencil. You can erase any of it if your room gives you opportunities, or if you feel like you have to adjust to a run that's happened or whatever it is. Just make sure all of this stuff is variable. I want you to be fluid. I want you to be flexible. That's one of the key words when it comes to fantasy football.
Yeah, no question. Just like a specific example of this, and this will transition us into our wide receiver strategy talk here. I've mentioned I'm not all that into like the third tier, that kind of rounds 3 to 4 wide receivers this year. I've typically gone running back or elite quarterback there. But that being said, like if I've got my positional tiered cheat sheet, which is how I prefer to draft off positions. And like, I know a general, especially early in the draft, like overall rankings are helpful, but I tend to kind of just know as a fantasy drafter, like the guys that I prefer over other players. But again, if I'm going into the drafting, I'm probably not looking at that third tier of wide receivers, but hey, my third tier of running backs has been hammered. You know, we're into the fourth tier and we're into some of the names there that I don't really particularly like, but Jackson Smith and Jigba, who's one of the top guys in my third tier, that I'm not out on JSN, but I'm not like, yeah, I gotta hammer him whenever I get there. But if he's just the best player on the board, like I'm totally okay ditching my positional strategy. Yeah, see, this is the group of guys, like number one, Tyreek Hill at wide receiver 12. I'm far lower than Tyreek Hill there, but
so out. I'm so out on Hill.
Yeah, same. It's this like that 13 to kind of 20 group here. It's not my favorite area to draft wide receivers. Like I think the guy, and again, this is going to transition us into the robust wide receiver discussion, but this is just a group of players that I'm not particularly taking a lot of, because just in the overall board, I like the running backs or the quarterback picks there a little bit better. And I don't see a big gap between some of the guys like Garrett Wilson, who I love, Marvin Harrison Jr., who I think is a great talent, right? I'm a big fan of his game. Even some of the older guys here, I don't think there's a big drop off between them and then some of the dudes that are in what is a pretty massive fourth and honestly even to the fifth tier. But let's talk robust wide receivers, because we can discuss some of these early round wide receiver picks. Scott, robust wide receiver, what is it? What type of leagues should be considering the strategy?
Right. Just before I go into that, I just want to piggyback two things on what you just said. One, you know wide receivers inside, outside. You chart them, you stat them, you evaluate them. So it's possible, Matt, that you have more confidence drafting wide receivers later, you know, round 5, 6, 7, 8, because you've done the legwork, and that's a expertise of yours. Ask yourself, dear listener, are you really good at the running back position, evaluating it, finding guys who aren't starters. You know, steer into what your strengths are. Where have you hit before in the past? What positions do you seem to understand? Maybe there isn't an answer to this. Maybe it doesn't apply to you. Case of Matt, he's a wide receiver guy. He's made his bones on that. He puts the work in on that. So it's not surprising to me that Matt would be more comfortable drafting wide receivers later than the average person might. And so I think that that's a very important thing to consider. Okay, robust wide receiver. And also, a lot of these strategies work in concert, right? Like if you go zero RB or hero RB, that might be because you're going robust RB at the same time. So these strategies can work together hand in hand collaboratively. And a lot of my teams are going to be robust RB. And this is where you have to ask yourself a setup question. Do you start two running? Do you start two wide receivers or three? If you only start two, it's not that hard to fill them. If you start three, I think it's more important to have a wide receiver room that's the envy of the league, especially if you have flexes and maybe four or five wide receivers might go and play. And by the way, if you want to add more skill to your league, add more starting players. Put more flexes in there. Yes, you have more to root for. And people say, oh, you know, the league doesn't have enough good players. Of course it does. It just, you have to lower your expectations of what your third receiver will do, what your flex player, what your second flex player will do. But what happens when you start more players is that, okay, my star player just went down in the first quarter on Sunday. If your league starts six or seven guys, you're kind of screwed. If your league starts 10 or 11 or 12 guys, you can offset it much easier because his impact isn't as significant. He's a lesser percentage of your output. So to me, you get true. I mean, I remember one league that had heavy starters. Had Peyton Manning throw six touchdowns or seven touchdowns in a game or something like that. I didn't win my game. And you know what? I wasn't even mad. I thought this is not a bug. This is a feature.
I would be mad.
It was week one. You know, I think I ended up still, you know.
Doesn't matter. You're a better man than I am. There nothing makes me more upset than being the guy that has like the Ja'Marr Chase 50-point week against the Ravens last year and you still lose. And it's always funny, Scott, sorry to just completely derail, but it's always funny because I'm normally the guy that posts you played against Ja'Marr Chase in fantasy, like see you next week or whatever. And you always get, you know, three or four replies. You're like, no, I actually have Ja'Marr Chase and I lost. That kills me as a fantasy player. So I'm commending you for being a much better person than I am.
I also say, you know, look, total points, more fair, head to head, more fun. That's the life we live in fantasy. A lot of my leagues have hybrid rules where some of it is the head to head. Some of it's the total points. We have a weekly prize winner. We put one of the playoff teams as a team that scores the most points. By the way, in Yahoo leagues, totally customizable. The commissioner can set up the playoff seedings any way he wants or she wants. And you can say, okay, I want one of the playoff spots to go to the team that scored the most points. That had a lousy record because they were unlucky because you can't stop the other team. You don't control who you play on the schedule and stuff like that. That's one of my favorite tweaks. I don't know if you'll do a show on that later. I'm sure somebody will write an article for it for hybrid formats, either you or me or Boone or maybe Mo Castillo or somebody, one of our great colleagues at Yahoo. So, or one of our, contractors might do it, but, and whatever, fiddle around with settings. So robust RB. Reason I like to go this way, if we're starting three or more receivers, and every league I set up is going to do that, is the idea, I talked about it earlier, Tyreek Hill goes out, there's not a Tyreek Hill Jr. Ja'Marr Chase goes out, all of a sudden, you know, Yoshivas doesn't become an 11-touchdown guy. He got a lot of playing time last year with T. Higgins hurt, and he still was quasi-startable, right? Like a wide receiver 3-4 at best. So because the waiver wire, I know Puka popped his rookie year and all that, but it's just so less likely to give us an impactful player than maybe the running back pool might. The idea that most of the impactful wide receivers will be drafted, I want to pound that position. If I need three or more starters, I want to have the best wide receiver room I can. And you just can't get as much help. You know, once you get past round 10, round 11, you're really skimming. You know, is it a Jalen Coker breakout season? You know, you're really hoping. Is this the year? Maybe DeMario Douglas, who I think actually might be a single-digit round guy by the end of draft season. He's had some good camp reports in New England. I like him there. And obviously, we like Drake May. We like Josh McDaniels. But you're not going to find wide receivers for next to nothing by and large, with very rare exceptions. So if you need to start three or more, I think robust RB makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, this is so sensitive to like, what is your lineup? What's your format, right? Obviously at Yahoo, we're a half PPR is our standard, but are you a full PPR league? That makes it even more sense for us to just hammer that wide receiver position. And again, I'll throw it back to these debates I had about zero RB with Michael Fabiano back in the day at NFL Network. And like, I was young and dumb and super idealistic, you know? So I just thought that I was right. I'm right about everything. I mean, that's how it is when you're in your early 20s, you know? But we're all growing and hopefully getting better. I know I'm hopefully growing and hopefully getting better. But anyways, I say that to say that, like, you know, one of Fab's big points to me was, dude, you got to remember, like, you're on NFL.com, you know, you're talking to like people that have, you know, 10 team leagues, full, like they were full standard at that point. Half PPR wasn't, or PPR wasn't the standard over there. It was just like full standard, old school, no PPR fantasy. Like, zero RB is not necessarily these like hammer the wide receiver early. Like, congratulations, you have two starting wide receivers and a flex, and you have five great wide receivers. You're benching one of those guys on an every week basis, and you probably are super frustrated because, like, that benched player, you're like, oh, great, your fifth wide receiver is Terry McLaurin, and this is the week that he had, you know, 98 yards and two touchdowns, and you're annoyed because you didn't play him. So I just say that to say that little anecdote is all about, hey, remember your league settings. If you're going to go like this robust wide receiver, definitely make sure you do have those three starting wide receiver spots. Maybe you have a couple of flexes. Maybe you're getting that full point PPR. That's great stuff. The second point there that I wanted to note about this, Scott, is that, yes, I definitely love wide receivers. Obviously, I'm all about the wide receivers. I'm about the depth of the position. Like, I can tell you deep down the board that I think guys like Josh Downs and, shoot, even Rashid Shaheed or Rashad Bateman are like great starting level wide receivers. But what's the opportunity for those players? What's the situation for those players? And that's what can be so appealing about the robust wide receivers that, yeah, I'm charting the depths of the league. I also know how damn good those guys are at the top. Right. I know how good those players are at the top. So I definitely think that, you know, it's very appealing to stack up multiple of those star wide receivers early, because it can be such a set it and forget it position when you get it right.
Yeah. And I got to call a flag on myself, because I set up the grid that we're working off, the script that we're working off. Robust RB was the first strategy we mentioned. Then we got to wide receivers. I just called it robust WR, robust wide receiver, but I kept saying robust RB because robust RB is more in the phrase that gets thrown around the industry. Maybe I should have called this dominate at wide receiver or stack wide receiver, you know, get, you know, the best wide
the
receiver.
The reception room, perception whatever it is. Strategy. I don't know.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I apologize. I probably misspoke and said robust RB about five times when I meant robust wide receiver. Good. I should have come up with a different term. Again, I go back to Anchor RB was my phrase. Hero RB came out. That's so much better. You know, I'm not the greatest brander. I'm not the greatest marketer. And this is just more proof of it. But yeah, I'm a big fan of build that great wide receiver room. And also, depending on how strong your opponents are, okay, people always say, should I stack? Should I stack? Right. I think stacking is a great strategy if you're trying to beat a contest that has a ton of people in it, or you're trying to beat a room that's really, really sharp, and you need to have the simplest dynamic scoring possibilities, which is, okay, I'm going to get Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb. I'm going to get, obviously, you can get Burrow and Chase. That would be great. I'm going to get a signature quarterback and his signature pass catcher. Sometimes it could be a tight end, of course. But the more I respect my room, the more I'd look to a stack, the less competitive my room is, the more I think you just beat people with a collection of good decisions. I don't think stacking is as important, but you can't talk about wide receivers, at least without mentioning stacking a little bit on the side. So I just want, when people say stacking, don't force it. You don't stacking, you know, hey, I came up with a stack. I have Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze. You know, I don't know if that's going to amount to anything. We'll see, but I'm open to stacking. I'm more likely to do it the more difficult I think my room is going to be to beat.
I also think that, you know, in terms of stacking, like, same wide receivers from the same team, you know, I think that some people are hesitant to do that. It does kind of depend on opportunity cost, right? Like, it might be pretty in a non like best ball format. It might not necessarily make sense to, hey, let me get Jamar Chase and T Higgins, because that's one of those rare opportunities. If Jamar Chase went down, like, T Higgins would go to the moon, and vice versa. Honestly, that's like typically when like wide receivers, not as you mentioned, Tyreek Hill goes down, Tyreek Hill Jr. steps up. It's the targets concentrate more to the already established players. But, you know, in the later rounds, I don't mind double tapping like a Jaden Reed upgrading to Matthew Golden, you know, kind of an ambiguous wide receiver room, because like if one of those guys ends up being the right answer, I'm going to get a huge profit. And in the meantime, like it's still just a usable wide receiver four on an offense that I think is good. So don't necessarily just always run away from the crowded target trees, the ambiguous wide receiver rooms, especially when there's some potential profit there. But Scott, anything else on wide receivers?
Let me mention one other thing about stacking. Okay. This is kind of like the floor stack, but I'm not afraid to do it. It has to be a very specialized offense. I think about like the year that Peyton Manning and the Broncos broke all the records and they just steered all their touchdowns to four guys. That was a situation where you could have no Sean Moreno there. He was a bell cow and one of the receivers. You could have Demaryius, the late Demaryius Thomas, great player. You could have Wes Welker. You could have Thomas, the tight end. Julius Thomas was a double-digit touchdown guy. I would be okay if you drafted Ja'Marr Chase up front. And then at some point, Chase Brown was the right pick. I have no problem with that. I think in the fantasy football index draft, I started with Bijan Robinson, second round. The very Matt Harmon approved Drake London was available. I'm like, I don't care. It's the best ball league. There's no transactions. I think Atlanta's going to be a pinball team. I think that division we always talk about is going to be a lot of 33-30 football. I'm not opposed to if the target tree is concentrated, if the team has carnival potential, I can live with one pass catcher and one running back. I have no problem with that.
That's a great call. I think about that Broncos team all the time because I lead off the great ecosystem section of the Blueprint draft with, like, was that the 2013 Broncos? Like, guess who won their fantasy leagues in 2013? The person who had the most Broncos. So, all right, let's get to the tight end here. And vanity tight end is the strategy, Scotty. Pretty straightforward, obviously, but lead us in on this one. And more importantly, Scott, tell us if this is a strategy that you're executing very often this year when you draft.
Yeah, I'm going to have some vanity tight end because I think George Kittle is a really nice target. I'm looking at Yahoo ADP right now. Brock Bowers, 21.8. Trey McBride, allergic to touchdowns, probably a Kyler Murray problem, 29.1. And George Kittle, 32.5. I realize, like, when you compare McBride and Kittle, McBride, all the volume, none of the touchdowns. Kittle, none of the volume, but he gets touchdowns. Last year, they got him going in the red zone. In previous years, Kittle has scored a lot of long touchdowns. Ridiculous touchdown length for a tight end. Different ecosystems, different setups, different scenarios. You know, football is a bunch of moving pieces. We have to try to see how the pieces fit together. This strategy makes a lot of sense. It works with your idea that maybe the wide receivers in round three, round four, maybe they kind of jumble together. This is why you're doing practice drafts and ask yourself, okay, here are the wide receivers who went in round five. Are they that different than the guys who went in round three? Round three is when you start picking guys that you're not totally sure about. You should love your first two picks. Your third round pick, you're going to have something gnawing at you that makes you think maybe this is the wrong pick. That's why they didn't go in the first two rounds. And so when you start thinking, yeah, I know a lot of people taking running backs right now. I don't love them. Yeah, I know a lot of people are taking wide receivers. I see 12 that look kind of similar to me. Some of those will get back to me in the next round. This is where you might pivot to a 1Z position. This will tie into one of our quarterback strategies later, of course. You might say, you know what? Why don't I get Brock Bowers? He can catch 120 passes and most tight ends can't. And some of my opponents are going to be starting guys praying for a touchdown, starting a player who might finish with 55, 60 catches, play a tight end who might not be on the field all the time, who may be 55, 60% snap share. Maybe he's not in the field, the goal line, stuff like that. They're just hoping to get lucky. They never have a chance at a double-digit target game. There just aren't that many tight ends who get volume, who can be the tight end one. And again, I said it, a wide receiver, you're probably not going to find a dynamic tight end on the waiver wire. You'll find a playable guy. You'll find a bye week fill-in guy, stuff like that. But you're generally the best tight ends are going to be drafted. So I understand once you don't feel that great about the running back wide receiver dance, why not say I'm going to beat him with Bowers. I'm going to beat him with McBride. I'm going to beat him with Kittle. I do not think Sam Laporta is good enough for the strategy. I don't think T.J. No, Hockenson, Mark Andrews, they fit in. They're perfectly fine picks. But they're not vanity tight ends to me. But to me, I come back to Kittle. Still got Shanahan. I'm a big believer in Brock Purdy. Samuel's gone. We don't know when Ayuk's coming back. It's been kind of a messy summer for Juwan Jennings, a player I like. Pearsall has some upside, but he's a second-year player who didn't play much last year. I think George Kittle has been set up to be an ADP smash all season. So if I am going vanity tight end, the target player I'd probably have would be George Kittle.
Yeah, George Kittle apparently considered retirement after the league sent out a memo saying they're banning ammonia inhalants and smelling salts. So that was a report from the NFL Network this week. Hopefully, we can come to a middle ground here on that one. We need George Kittle on the field because I agree with you. He is in the same tier as Bowers and McBride to me. We'll really dive into this next week on Position Week when we talk through the tight end preview episode. Because to me, like tight ends. You know, Boone and I had this discussion a few episodes ago. He's really locked this into my brain. And it's like, if you're going to have that clear cut every week advantage tight end, you need them to be the first or second target on their team. And that's what makes the top three guys so clear. Brock Bowers, 153 targets as a rookie, going as the 20th overall player. There's a tiny, tiny part of me, Scott, that wonders if he might see a small dip in overall targets now that they've added some, you know, rookies that are interesting and Besh and Thornton, they're going to run the ball, I think, at a much higher rate. They were actually third in pass rate last year because they were like always behind. Their defense was terrible, but that's not enough for me to call Bowers a fade. And like, yeah, he could be a 130 target player as we project him to be a Yahoo this year. And like, we're not like, that's fine. He could still be the tight end one. Trey McBride was 10th in the NFL in first read target share, according to Fantasy Points data. Nothing more needs to be said there. He's obviously one of the top, like Marvin Harrison Jr. could break out, like take a true breakthrough this season. And he would still be one of the top two targets on that team. And Kittle, like, yeah, Kittle is not going to project to the same level of those guys from a raw targets. I believe we had him on the screen earlier at 98 targets, but he averaged 2.65 yards per route run last year, Scott. That led tight ends by a significant gap. McBride was second at 2.15. Bowers was 2.02. So, yes, you are banking on efficiency, but that's the type of player that I think can continue to be efficient in that environment and can still be the second target, third at worst in a very unique environment there in George Kittle. And the rest of the board, like, especially these guys that were showing 4 to 9, really. I mean, like, none of these guys, maybe like Evan Ingram, TJ Hockenson, when Jordan Addison is suspended, are going to be the top two targets. But for the most part, it's tough to make the case for some of these guys. Maybe Mark Andrews, maybe Travis Kelce, but like they have some receivers that can take a step forward. So it's pretty difficult to make the case at this point. That's why that vanity tight end can really be appealing if you don't like the other picks on the board.
And for anybody who doesn't go the vanity tight end, just an idea of what are you doing at tight end first? You know, what data do you care about? What stats do you care about? We want our tight ends to run routes. We want our tight ends to be in the slot, right? So pay attention to how often is my tight end blocking? How often is he in line? Slot percentage for a tight end is a very predictive stat. And it's just certain stuff you're looking at. And you mentioned Fantasy Pros. They have great data. A lot of the data is in the Yahoo game now. And I hope you take advantage of that because that's the type of stuff you need to. I think there's a lot of sneaky data grabs and signals, indicators that you can take advantage of specifically at the tight end position.
All right, we are going to take a quick break here. We come back. We are going to talk through quickly quarterback strategies. A lot of ways to go at that position. We're going to get into it right after this. All right, we are back, Scott. We're going to talk through three strategies at the quarterback position. Just a little table set here. And again, I wrote this in the blueprint piece that came out this week. I used to be the most hardened late round quarterback bro that there was. Like, I was going late round quarterback no matter what. That's not the case anymore because the position has changed in the last few years. So let's talk through the complete opposite of that, which is QB strategy number one, the vanity quarterback. Scott, dive into this one.
Yeah, the position has changed. And, you know, I love that you mentioned your stance on late round QB changing. I mean, our friend JJ Zacharyson, the great JJ Zacharyson, who built his brand on late round QB, even he would shrug and say, you know, he said it the last few seasons that, you know, the league is different. The landscape is different. Different strategies need to be considered forever. Late round QB was a cheat code. We'll get to that in a second. But the idea with vanity QB, you're getting in round two, round three, round four. A lot of those running backs and receivers starting to look the same. Maybe you're not a vanity tight end guy. Why not take Lamar Jackson, who just had one of the like five best fantasy seasons of all time? Why not take Josh Allen, your Jaden Daniels? You can wait even a little bit. I think there's a big five with Hurts and Burrow. They won't go as early as those top three guys I mentioned, but they're all top 50 players or so in Yahoo ADP. Quarterbacks generally stay healthy. They're consistent. Their scoring is very consistent because they're very unlikely to do nothing for you in the touchdown column every week. A lot of those guys have rushing appeal, which we'll talk about a little bit more in detail in one of the other strategies that we mentioned. But the idea is that how do you win fantasy, right? It's about the marginal difference of how much more does my quarterback score than your quarterback? How much more do my running backs score than your running backs? How much more do my receivers score than your receivers and so on? And it doesn't matter where you get the edges, right? You can build a dominant team with great running backs. You can build a dominant team with great receivers. But if you have one of these superstar quarterbacks, you're going to outscore your opponents almost every week at that position. And then you put it on freeze, right? I mean, if you take Jackson or Allen, Daniels, you might not have to draft a backup. It gives you another roster spot to play with. So just remember that the players, these dual threat superstar quarterbacks, or in the case of Burrow, he's in probably a carnival again. Their defense stinks. He's got two great receivers to throw to. How much more are they going to score than the second, third, fourth tier of quarterback? That may be enough for you to pull the trigger early in your draft.
Yeah, and I really want to go elite quarterback again this year, man. It does depend on the board, no question about it. But when I look at any time, like right now in Yahoo ADP, 21st to 29th picks, that's where Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Jaden Daniels are going. Jaden Daniels is the latest of the group right now, so he's probably the easiest one to grab. But that being said, like there are some drafts where those guys fall to the third round, and if those guys are available in the third round, like forget it. I'm going to take those players, Scott, over the T. Higgins, the James Cooks, the Breece Halls, the Tyreek Hill group of like flex-eligible players basically every single time. I do think there is a tier drop to Burrow and Hurts, but they're still great consolation prizes, right? Like if I end up with one of those guys, my QB1, I feel really good. And because they go a little bit later, it's easy to grab them. Like for Jalen Hurts, you know, we had all of our Saquon Barkley concerns in the first round podcast that we did. Yeah. What if Barkley misses time with the workload fatigue from last year? What if they just aren't as efficient as a ground game? What if their defense does regress from first to, you know, mid, like 10th or something like that? Still one of the best defenses in the league, but that's a lot of regression, and they just throw the football more. Like I think Hurts can be a fantasy, you know, hammer in that situation. It's not just about the tush pushes and stuff like that. So I don't think those guys are bad consolation prizes at all. And really, Scott, because of that, like the mid-level of quarterbacks, like I don't know if you've tiered out the position yet. It's just, I'm not really touching that mid tier at all, because I think there's a big drop from those guys to the next group, and not that big of a drop from from like QB 6, 7, 8 all the way down to like deep into the quarterback rankings. So I really like going elite quarterback this year, the vanity quarterback up at the top. But let's get into late round quarterback here, because then again, like I said, if I'm not touching that group from 50 to 70 overall, where Pat Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, you know, I'm not dipping my toes in that water, I am typically going late round quarterback next. Talk through that strategy for the people.
Yeah, a lot of smart fantasy managers, a lot of smart analysts will say, if you're not going to be early in the position, be late. Maybe be the last team to take a quarterback. And who are you going to get? Maybe Dak Prescott. He's got quarterback, 2, 3, 6, and 7 finishes on his resume. They just added George Pickens, obviously CeeDee Lamb in the prime of his career. We've talked about them as being maybe a possible carnival shootout team. Defense is suspect. I don't know about that running back room. You could draft the last quarterback in your league and maybe get Prescott. Okay, you don't like Prescott. Maybe you get Jared Goff, right? He's kind of a vanilla guy. He's not exciting. He's not going to run that much, but there's still a lot of pieces there. Maybe people have overreacted to the loss of Ben Johnson. John Morton can get things cooking with a lot of good skill talent. You know, he could be an interesting guy. Maybe C.J. Stroud. Everything went wrong for him last year. He's tied to an elite receiver, Nico Collins. Maybe you could stack Stroud and Collins. That could make a lot of sense. Justin Fields might run for 1,000 yards. Brock Purdy has some fun toys, and he's in a Shanahan offense. So all these guys I'm mentioning, and your league is going to be different. You know, maybe in some leagues Fields will go early. Maybe in some leagues people are 49er fans, they'll go after Purdy, or, you know, people talk themselves into Justin Herbert or Caleb Williams, or, you know, Trevor Lawrence could be a very late round pick. He may be a waiver wire guy in some shallower leagues. JJ McCarthy has the ecosystem with Kevin O'Connell and Justin Jefferson. We like that. doesn't matter who you land on, right? And maybe you're a Drake May guy, you know, maybe you're a Bo Nix, might go a little bit too early for this conceit, but there are just a bottomless, if you like the Miami setup, I don't, but if you think Tyreek Hill actually isn't washed, he's going to have a comeback season. Well, he's going to drag Tua along with it. Maybe he's your guy. Stafford would be somebody I'd be talking up if he were healthy. He probably isn't right now. Bryce Young played well at the end of last year. Michael Penix Jr., I think they have shootout potential. We like Drake London. We like Bijan. So the last team to draft a starting quarterback is still going to get a good one. The quarterbacks taken in the last two or three rounds of your leagues, even backups, are going to have upside, are going to have top five, top 10, top 12 upside. So this is, again, going back to J.J. Zacharyson, late round QB. The position is so deep, although there are certainly a strong case for taking that quarterback, say, in the third round you talked about, when you don't love the running back and receiver options are starting to look similar. But you can definitely tell yourself an upside story for, I think, as many as 24 or 25 quarter. What if Anthony Richardson got the job in Indianapolis? I mean, I'm not in love with Anthony Richardson, but we know right. He's an athlete. We know he's going to run a lot, right? I mean, that's – and we'll get to that as the final prong of quarterback strategy. But you can tell yourself an upside story for, I think, about 24 or 25 quarterbacks in the NFL this year. So and the names aren't going to be the same. Some people will believe in – play. You know, some people will be, yeah, give me Trevor Lawrence. I like Liam Cohen. I like Travis Hunter. And other people will be like, no, I'm done with Trevor Lawrence. I don't think he's that good. You know, Liam Cohen, how do we feel about him a year ago? Maybe people are over their skis on him. It doesn't matter how you land on that. There's going to be some of these guys you do like. Identify them, and that makes late round quarterback a very viable strategy. Again, season to the taste of your room.
Yeah, I was going to say it does depend on your league, right? Whether you're going to take two quarterbacks, if like they hoard quarterbacks in that league, you can't just like pluck dudes off the waiver wire and constantly stream. Definitely then you might want to get like two late round guys. And what's really interesting there, Scott, as you were talking, this was becoming kind of crystallized to me that, again, I think QB 6 to 17 is very flat. But even when I look at some of the guys in that 6 to 17 tier, I think there are so many interesting arbitrage plays in the next tier of guys, right? Like Baker Mayfield, is Trevor Lawrence not the arbitrage Baker Mayfield, right? I have Mayfield a little lower than where he's at ADP-wise just because I think you're counting on a lot of things to kind of come together for him. But again, like, Baker Mayfield's losing Liam Cohen. Trevor Lawrence is getting him. Baker Mayfield has these star wide receivers. Trevor Lawrence about to have two star wide receivers in Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Hunter, right? Like, he's kind of the arbitrage Mayfield. I saw Jordan Love up there at QB 17. I've, again, got him a couple spots higher. I think he's a dark horse to lead the NFL in touchdown passes this year if everything breaks right with that receiver room and he kind of takes a step forward. Well, Michael Penix might be like an even deeper arbitrage play to lead the NFL in passing touchdowns because he's playing with Drake London, who is a freaking superstar. He is a guy that's aggressive. They're very excited about him. The defense is not going to be good. They're going to have to throw the ball a lot. Shoot, again, you could go like Justin Fields, right? Justin Fields is going early in drafts, but Justin Fields, like Anthony Richardson, might be the arbitrage Justin Fields. So you see, like, you can keep doing this at quarterback. That's why Superflex is so fun, and that's why I love to kind of wait pretty late at that second quarterback spot in Superflex because, again, Bryce Young, right? Like, maybe Bryce Young's the arbitrage of the arbitrage Baker Mayfield and Trevor Lawrence. You see, like, again, you can keep doing this whole thing here, and, you know, and you can continue to find really good quarterback answers. But, Scott, usually – and this is going to transition us into our final strategy. Usually your really big time late round quarterback hit comes because they have one trait. So lead us into QB strategy number three.
Yeah, the idea that you mobile quarterback or bust, right? Our colleague Dan Titus is a big fan of this strategy that your quarterback has to run either resourcefully and it's an add-on, or he runs aggressively and he maybe even lead his team touchdown carries. I mean, last year we saw Hurts go crazy with that. Lamar Jackson, not a big touchdown guy with the rushing, but he's one of the best athletes in the league. He's going to run for 800 yards. Josh Allen, by the way, I hope people realize, by the way, Josh Allen won an MVP. The leading touchdown reception guy in Buffalo was Mac Hollins. And that's a pretty nifty trick, Josh Allen. Here's to you. Even though I would have given the MVP to Lamar Jackson, but it doesn't matter. Josh Allen's fantastic. He was going to win an MVP sooner or later. Kyler Murray, if he has a great fantasy season, it's going to be partly because of his legs. We saw even last year, even guys you don't think of necessarily as runners, right? A lot of the breakout late in the season for Bryce Young was his five rushing touchdowns. Drake May is a dynamic runner. So Rich Rebar, Konami code, you know, it's the way fantasy is scored. And we've learned, you know, people say, oh, well, what if my quarterback runs? He's going to get hurt. That really hasn't proven out to be that big of a risk. Most of these guys are smart. They slide. They don't take the kill shots that you worry about. So a lot of people will say, don't draft Jared Goff. He's not going to run at all. Don't draft Matthew Stafford. He's not going to run at all. Some people may not want to draft Dak Prescott. He used to run. He doesn't really run anymore. Focus on the legs. And remember, if these guys run dynamically, we may never know that Justin Fields is a great regular quarterback, but he could run for 1,000 yards. That makes him a great fantasy quarterback. Russell Wilson, back in the day, it was a big part of his game. It really isn't anymore. But identify the guys who can run, the guys who may have five or more touchdown upside in their bag. They may run for 500, 600, 700 yards. In the case of Fields, I think you can get to 1,000. You have to, when you're evaluating this position, you have to ask for all these guys, how much do I think they can run? Is there an upside there? Is there a ceiling they could break? And that's how maybe Drake May might be, you know, he may be drafted as like the quarterback 18, the quarterback 22. If he finishes in the top 10, if he finishes in the top five, it's because he ran for like 700 yards and 8 touchdowns.
Yeah, and just to put the bow on this point, because I love what you led it off with, is some guys that are resourceful runners. Like, yeah, we know like Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen are incredible runners, but there's some guys, I'm just going to read off the players who scrambled more than 40 times last year. Because like design quarterback runs are great, and I will throw some design quarterback run notes in here, but really it's the scrambles that elevate you to a whole different level in fantasy. These are the players that scrambled more than 40 times last year. Number one was Jaden Daniels with 75, not surprising. Number two was actually Bo Nix at 50, but Caleb Williams was right there at 50 as well. He's a guy who scored 0 touchdowns on scrambles last year. That's something to consider. If he breaks out, it will be because I think they make use of his mobility as a quarterback there and some of the improvisational nature of his game. 45 scrambles for Lamar Jackson, 45 for Drake May, despite the fact he did not play a whole season. Drake May, 407 scramble yards last year, 2 more than Lamar Jackson, second only to Jaden Daniels in the NFL last year. Brock Purdy scrambled 44 times last year. And Brock Purdy, this is a designed quarterback note, had 0.8 EPA per designed rush last year. That was right up there with some of the best in the league. Baker Mayfield, actually, who scrambled 42 times right behind Josh Allen at 43, had 0.83 EPA per designed rush. So like that just again shows you what a like, I hate to use a phrase like sneaky runner that Brock Purdy is, but he's become a really, really good like designed rush and scramble player as well. So again, one more Kyler Murray, no surprise, 41 scrambles last year. But just honorable mention here to Bryce Young, who scrambled 37 times and obviously didn't get to that 40 mark that I'm talking about, but he would have had he not played a full game. And he scored he had a 14% rushing touchdown rate on his scrambles last year. So he was definitely not just a proactive scrambler, but a smart and decisive one in the like low red zone there. So, man, I think those guys, like, yeah, these are some players, like there are obvious ones, right? Fields, we know. Anthony Richardson, we know we're gonna boost those guys because they're big time rusher. Even Bo Nix at this point, like that's why he's going in the top 80 picks right now. We know those guys are runners, but there is a few others in this list that I think people might not necessarily expect because they're known for their passing ability or they play in this great offensive ecosystem, but they're adding rushing value both in real life and in fantasy football.
Yeah, I think people may be surprised at how much J.J. McCarthy could run. We've seen Trevor Lawrence augment his fantasy value with rushing. And as you're trying to figure this out week over week, because sometimes it isn't consistent, focus on, does the defense play a lot of man or a lot of zone? Because what happens when the defense plays man? Defenders back to the quarterback. And that's when a lot of times the quarterback will see, okay, nobody's open, but everybody's got their back to me. I got 9 or 11 yards just calling my name out. I'm not even going to take a hit. I'm just going to, you know, take these yards, first down, slide, easy gain. So that's how you can sometimes navigate that week over week. And I realize every team plays a combination of man and zone, and there are some hybrid packages where it's a little bit of man and a little bit of zone anyway. I don't want to get too in the weeds on that, but just something to consider on a week-over-week basis. But we've seen last 15 years, this position has gotten more athletic, and it's just not many guys get drafted anymore as straight court, you know, pocket quarterbacks, and the most successful guys are going to be the players who can beat you more than one way. And so there's a lot to unpack with this, but the bottom line is it gives us more choices. There are more donuts. There are more bagels in the bagel shop, and to me, choice is a great thing.
Absolutely. Just to finish your point there on Trevor Lawrence in 2023, he scrambled 41 times. Justin Fields that year, who I swear to God, you mentioned man coverage defense. I still think the biggest reason that he is a member of the New York Jets is because he ripped up Aaron Glenn's man coverage heavy defense in Detroit when he was the defense coordinator there, now head coach New York Jets. He ripped him up on the ground as a scrambler against their man coverage heavy defense. Fields scrambled 43 times in 2023. Trevor Lawrence right there at 41. So he's a good inclusion there as well as J.J. McCarthy. So yeah, of course, like the great Rich Rebar, the Konami code, it continues to live in our fantasy football lexicon. Scotty, that is going to do it. Appreciate the hell out of you for joining me for this show. Very excited for the rest of August. Tell the people what you got working on right now.
Yeah, obviously doing a bunch of written fantasy football content, but what I want to celebrate today and shine a light on is the Fantasy Football Newsletter, which comes to your inbox twice a week during the preseason. It will be a multiple week delivery, I think three times a week during the regular season. We're going to give you all the intel you need. We're going to be quick, but we're going to be fun. We're going to be informative. You will be a better fantasy player and a happier fantasy player if you subscribe to our newsletter. So I hope you check it out and join us today.
I say it all the time. If you do not subscribe to this YouTube channel, I will be personally offended. I'm going to double down on that. If you're not subscribed to the newsletter, I'm going to be 2x personally offended. So please make sure you subscribe to the newsletter and get everything that Scott is doing there. That is going to do it for today's show. As I mentioned earlier, position preview week kicks off with the quarterbacks on Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern live on YouTube. So subscribe to the channel. Make sure we see you at 5 p.m. Until then, we are out.